Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC alongside Shaka Hislop. I'm Sebastian Salas. Our wild day, Shaka, in the race for the top four in the Premier League. Don Hutchison will join us a little bit later on to discuss that. But man, we got to start at Wembley. Semi-finals of the FA Cup. What a match between Liverpool and Manchester City. Liverpool rocking and rolling right from the jump. Up 3-0 at half. Goals from Konate early on and then a brace from Sadio Mane had them in cruise control. Second half, different story. Jack Grealish scoring early in the second half. Bernardo Silva scoring late. In the end, though, not enough for City to pull off the comeback. Liverpool through to the FA Cup final. For more on this one, let's get it back out to Wembley with Frank Leboeuf and our Alexis Nunes.
Robert, congratulations. I know that was a tough one. What a difference a week makes. Anything you learned from the last time you played them, just less than a week ago, that helped tonight?
Yeah, look, we learned a lot. Of course we did. You know, anytime you play against a team like Man City, you can learn, you know, what we've done well and what we've done not so well. So we knew we had to come out high energy, you know, get in their faces, try and put them under pressure, don't give them time on the ball. And I think you've seen that. We put a lot into the first half an hour. And it was a really good performance by us. And then, you know, second half, it was about defending the lead. And, you know, luckily we just got there in the end.
First half was obviously absolutely insane, not only result-wise, performance-wise as well. It was for sure one of the best first halves we ever played since I'm at Liverpool. So, yeah, and I'm really happy about the second half as well, because the strength of City, when they showed up again, it's like, okay, wow, that's really special if you beat them. And we beat them, and we deserved it. They were lucky here, lucky there, but they were lucky as well with our counterattacks. So this is the fair outcome for a really special football game, and I'm really, really happy.
We have to talk about Sadio Mane, because he was definitely on another level today. We just spoke to Robbo and he mentioned that your favorite goal of Sadio's might have been that one where he capitalized on a Stefan fumble.
Definitely. And the other one was not bad as well, but it's not, I hate the fact that you need a moment like this, like a little mistake off the goalie, because especially afterwards, with all the noise in the stadium, it's not easy to stay in the game, but I think Zach did really well. But in that moment, Sadio was just there and used this little opportunity. There was no opportunity until Sadio accelerated. Yes, and I love that to bits, to be honest.
Being ESPN, we keep an eye on the American Zach Steffen out there. You mentioned some of the changes. He went there. It looked to be a tough game for him. But how do you make of how he's kind of playing his trade now at Manchester City? Because we know how difficult it can be, knowing the quality this squad has.
No, I think Zach was, I think it showed his character, you know, in the second half especially. You know, he could have easily, you know, hid and made more mistakes, but he come out, you know, didn't concede another goal in the second half, and you know, was brilliant with the ball at his feet. You know, it's always going to be difficult for a keeper to come in and play with his feet, you know, as much as Edison does, because I think Eddie's, you know, the best in the world at that. But Zach's brilliant, you know. We see what he's like day in, day out at training, and the manager obviously sees that, and that's why he played him today.
Well, of course, the manager saw something very special in you when he brought you to Manchester City. How have you been finding life at City now?
It's been all right. It's been difficult. And no, it's been good. Obviously, you know, I've had a few stuff said about me, but I've enjoyed it here, you know. Obviously, it was nice to score today, but it didn't really mean too much in the end, with us obviously not being on the winning side. I'm enjoying it here. I'm looking forward. This is what I've come here to do, you know, playing the biggest stages, and we've certainly got that now coming to the end of the season. You know, we've got the Premier League to play for and the Champions League, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, look, Shaka, being a goalie, I got to get your perspective on the Zach Steffen stuff. We'll wait for that just a minute. We're going to hear from Don Hutchison on this match as well. But first things first, let's hear from some people who actually witnessed it live. Alexis Nunes and Frank Leboeuf from Wembley.
Thanks so much, Sebi. And Frank and I had quite the day at Wembley. The sun even came out. We weren't really treated to the blockbuster that we were expecting between Manchester City and Liverpool, as it was less than a week ago. But we still saw quite the masterclass from Jurgen Klopp and his men.
Exactly, Alexia, especially the first half, where Liverpool were outstanding, completely outstanding. I mean, from all players, but especially in the middle of the park with Thiago Alcantara and Keita. But overall, that was a great first half performance from the Reds, with the fans as well, I have to say, because they won also in the stands. And in the second half, you know, City reacted very quickly with Grealish's goal. But we didn't feel that something really could have happened until the last 5 minutes of the game, when they scored the second goal. And then we had the suspense that we were looking for. It's a little pity that we couldn't see that before from the Guardiola's men, because it would have been possible to have another ending if they would have reacted a little bit earlier.
That's true. And one of the things that Frank was saying as well is the fact that Liverpool just went in there with such intensity, such passion as well, and that may have been, you think, a bit more of a key than City, who were probably trying to be a bit more precise, as Guardiola comes to like it.
That's the main thing that I've seen today, being in the stand and watching the two teams, that I feel that in the Manchester City side, they always try to be precise, to be 100% good.
That tiki-taka perfection.
Yeah, tiki-taka, we wait for the great time, you know, we're passionate with patience. We try to do things perfectly. And in another hand, from the red side, Liverpool, they have the passion. Mm. They have the right to fail. They have the right to be mistaken. But they, because of the passion, they compensate and they correct everything, which is not the case. And today wasn't the case for the Guardiola's men. They had some issues fighting against the passion of Liverpool. And they couldn't cope with that, especially the first half.
And speaking about Manchester City, one of the things that we know Manchester City fans and Pep sort of use as their secret weapon is the fact that City have such a deep squad. We look at the quality on the bench and we say, geez, other teams would take them and put those guys on the bench in their starting 11. But now, after what we saw today with the changes that Pep made, is it probably hinting that City's depth isn't quite as good or with the quality that we all thought it was?
It's very tricky to make the good choices, and when your coach feels what he sees in the dressing room and in at the training ground and makes his own decision, and it's why he's there. For us, we just see the final decision and we say, okay, why he took that decision. And for example, you see that Klopp didn't put the young Kelleher and he put Alisson, where Guardiola allowed himself to put Zach Steffen instead of Ederson. I think the issue of the game would have been different if Ederson would have played. But that's the decision of the coach, and he will take full responsibility for that. But in a matter of the depth of the stand, when you have players, the bench, when you have players like De Bruyne, who are not 100%, Diaz, who is not 100%, you have the end of the season to think about. So, I don't know, maybe he decided that the FA Cup was less important than the Premier League and the Champions League, and make sure that just because he's one of the main players, we'll be ready very soon, maybe against Brighton, to finish the end of the season and make sure that City can be the champion of England.
As for Liverpool now, they've played City so many times. Do you think that's now kind of sharpened them, and the fact that they know now how to beat Manchester City, considering both of them are now locked in a title race?
The thing with Liverpool, and I think Robertson talked about it, where they play game after game. They don't think through, you know, and project themselves to the end of the season, what the game they have to play within 2 or 3 weeks, and the maybe and possible Champions League final against Manchester City if they both qualified from the semis. So it's they only live the day, the present. And the present today was the fighting and beating Manchester City in the final. Then next week, what's going to happen to them in the Premier League, and see, you know, in some days, you know, in the Champions League. And that's the way, I think, the best way for me to live and to fight for competition and for all competition they're in, because that's what it is. They can do the quadruple if they carry on like that, and that's the best way to make sure you don't fail in any step.
All right, well, as Jack Grealish told me, they've still got the semi-finals of the Champions League and a Premier League title to go up against, so I guess it's not all that bad. But as for the stories at Wembley, it'll be Liverpool who will be here in the final come May, and we'll see exactly who gets to go up against them. Will it be Chelsea or Crystal Palace? We'll find out soon, Sebi.
All right, great stuff, guys. Don Hutchison joining us now as well. We got to start with Stefan. Look, it's not his first big error. It's not his first big error in an FA Cup semifinal that cost Manchester City. Is it unfair to ask if he's good enough to be Manchester City's number two?
I think Zach Steffen is good enough. I think he's an incredibly talented goalkeeper. I just do not understand choosing to be at a club like City for as long as he has and being a number two. I see all of his errors through the lens of someone who hasn't been playing. This one, his first touch is good, but when you haven't been playing, you take a little bit of time just to make a decision.
But he just saw Ederson almost not get away with the same thing a week ago.
Yes, I totally agree. But here's the thing, and this is born out of not being match sharp. You collect the ball, your first lookup is Stones, he's pointing out to the other side. So you take your time before you think about what you're going to do out there, never recognizing that Sadio Mane hasn't stopped his run or just mistiming how quickly he's closing you down. That's a lack of match sharpness. That's because you have not been playing games. And for me, now all of a sudden, he finds himself in this spot again, and doubling down on that caution, because now he's very careful about everything he does, every decision he makes, all his movements, and it's slowing down. It's slowing him down, and only makes it worse for him on the day.
Don, I want to bring you in here because we heard Frank talk about the decision that Guardiola makes to go with Steffen, and you look on the other side. Jurgen Klopp goes with his number one. Should Ederson have started today?
I think you should, Sebi. I think Shaq is absolutely spot on. When you see the Zach Steffen mistake, it's a lack of sharpness. He's not started too many times this season. And when you actually see that again, you see the mistake again, Shaq will probably agree when you see it. There's an invisible touch there where he takes a touch and his first touch is quite good. Then he's keeping an eye on maybe John Stones, maybe Nathan Ake to his left-hand side. And when you actually see it again, not from this angle, you'll see it probably behind the goal, there's an invisible touch by him. So he's trying to get a little touch on the ball for his muscle memory. And then that touch is not there. He misses it. Watch. Just there. And he misses it. That throws him. And then he thinks, oh, like muscle memory, I was expecting a touch there. Then the next proper touch, he's in trouble now. It's too late. Sadio Mane, he's got eyes on him. He's got eyes on the ball. All his options have probably gone blurry. And he's thinking, man, I'm in a world of trouble. And he probably knows that's going to happen probably a split second just before it does.
Shaka, from a US perspective, does Steffen need to leave City? There's been reports that he's considering a loan move before the World Cup.
I thought he should have left City 2 years ago. Zach Steffen is 27 years old now. And in all honesty, given the high-profile nature of his recent errors, I don't know what he's on salary-wise. Who takes a chance on Zach Steffen, given his current salary, given the nature of his recent mistakes, and somebody at 27 years old, who, back in my day, they used to say keepers didn't hit their peak until 30. Now you're looking at goalkeepers who are playing some of their best football at 22, 23. Which is the club out there that takes that chance on Zach Steffen right now? I think, to your point, he's in real danger of losing his number one spot for the United States national team. You saw that in the recently concluded international as well against Costa Rica, where it was Costa Rica, right?
Yeah.
I thought a couple of those goals, again, I keep seeing through the lens of someone who hasn't been playing regularly enough. So I see again, certainly in terms of the American perspective, I think in terms of pure talent, he's the most talented of the bunch of US keepers. But the fact that he has not been playing has allowed the likes of Matt Turner to not just close the gap, but surpass him in many people's eyes. And I'm starting to think that way as well.
So beyond Zach Steffen, there's seven changes to this Manchester City lineup from the team we saw in midweek Champions League against Atletico Madrid. Don, what did you think of the approach from Pep Guardiola to an FA Cup semifinal?
Well, apart from the goalkeeper, I thought it was the right team. I mean, Fernandinho was a gamble for sure. He had no Kevin De Bruyne. He was on the bench, but highly unlikely to feature because you just can't risk him. You've got a Champions League semi-final and the rest of the season to look forward to. So that was understandable. But maybe, you know, and it's all in hindsight because, you know, Fernandinho is a fantastic player, brilliant servant. He's announced that he's leaving the club. Maybe Man City would have been best off going with Ilkay Gundogan in midfield, a guy that scores goals, a knowledgeable player that can play different positions. He knows how to keep the ball moving. He's fresh. He's younger than Fernandinho. He knows the game. And a little bit Zach Steffen-like, where you're throwing Fernandinho into a semi-final of an FA Cup who hasn't had too many starts. Again, lack of sharpness. So I think Guardiola's probably got one eye or two eyes on finishing the Premier League season strongly and then definitely trying to win the Champions League. So I'm not saying this was a priority because top managers like Pep, they want to win the lot. But if anything was going to get parked, it was probably this game.
Yeah. To that point, Shaka, no changes at the half when you're down 3-0 and you don't make a sub until the 83rd minute. It seems pretty clear where Guardiola's priorities are. Is there a problem with that?
No, I have absolutely no problem with that. And in our pre-game show, in the studio during the game, you heard Steve Nicholls talk about that, that this team got you into trouble in the first half and you read them the riot act at halftime and send them back out there to correct their mistakes. And they went some way to doing that in the second half. But for the Gabriel Jesus chance, well said by Alisson, maybe we're having a different discussion. But that, for me, is the message. And to Don's point, of the three competitions that City are still in, this is the one that means the least to them. Mm-hmm. And if they had to sacrifice one, this was always going to be it. So to that point, if you are going to send a message to not just the team out there, but to the entire dressing room about what's expected, now is the perfect time. And you do that by sending them back out there with your criticism ringing in their ear and forcing them to correct those errors. So in the big picture, right now, you're out of the FA Cup, yes, and you have to deal with those wounds. But in the big picture, it may serve City and Guardiola better by just sending them back out and in an effort to claw their way back into the game.
Don, what about Liverpool here? Some praise for them. I mean, so good, especially in those first 15, 20 minutes.
Incredible. Incredible, Sebi. And I think the advantage was with Liverpool after the Champions League ties midweek. And I think Man City, even though they got a draw in Madrid, it was an emotional game and it took a lot out of the youngsters. People like Phil Foden, who was magnificent, but it was a learning lesson for him, had to go away in Europe. Then you come back and you're playing a game at Wembley. But I've got to say, Sebi, I thought Liverpool were at it from minute one. I thought the midfield was exceptional. I thought Thiago had one of his best games in the Liverpool shirt, same as Naby Keita. The front three is the front three. Now, take your pick which ones you like out the five. I mean, Jota came off the bench. Firmino came off the bench. And it was interesting to hear Alexis and Frank talk about the strength and the depth of Man City's squad. I actually think now Liverpool have not only caught up to Man City in squad depth, I think they've actually gone ahead of them. Because if Andy Robertson's injured, Tsimikas comes in. The only one where it's debatable and it's different, if Joe Gomez plays instead of Trent, because Trent's a world-class player, but Joe Gomez is a brilliant centre-back. You go into midfield, you go into the front five. It's an incredible standard. Keller has a brilliant young goalkeeper that I think is the future of Liverpool. I don't know if Shaka agrees on Keller, but he looks very, very calm. Alisson's amazing. But even when Alisson comes out and Keller goes in, I don't see any drama. I don't see any mistakes from him. So Liverpool's squad, I think, is really strong.
Don, since you mentioned the midfield, when we saw the lineup there, didn't include Jordan Henderson. Are you telling me Liverpool's best midfield three doesn't include him?
Well, I am, Sebi, but I'm not saying it to be disparaging. I think what Jurgen Klopp does is, going back to the Champions League 3-3 against Benfica, that's where I think Liverpool had the advantage, because that was a fixture that they drew, but you know what I mean? They won it comfortably in terms of going through. Then he could make so many changes going into this game. But Man United midweek on Tuesday, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if Jordan Henderson's playing, because the squad is together. And I see a team spirit playing for Liverpool where Jordan Henderson will quite happily, never happened in my day, by the way, in Shaka's day, if I was dropped in my day, I was devastated. I was emotional. Now these players are different. Jordan Henderson will come out the game probably knowing the manager said to him, hey, get yourself ready because you might be starting against Man United. Then you're looking at a different midfield. The key, I think, for Liverpool is Fabinho in midfield. When he's in there, Sebi, I think you can wrap Fabinho around Jordan Henderson. It's Naby Keita. It's Curtis Jones. It's one of many, but the glue is Fabinho, in my opinion. Mm.
Any impact on the title race here?
No.
No?
I don't think so. I don't think it has any kind of a negative impact on Manchester City for the reason that I just mentioned, that this was of the three competitions, this was the one that they are more than prepared to sacrifice. For Liverpool, I think it's a boost in confidence. This is Liverpool's first win over City in any competition since 2019. So I think that gives some confidence to who they are and how they now match up with Manchester City. Don spoke about squad depth and competing in all the different competitions that are still to come. They're both in the Champions League semi-finals. So I feel that while it's easy to dismiss this as not really having an impact, if you're Liverpool, you take this. You're very happy with maybe not the final result, but certainly how this game started and how you matched up and outplayed City.
Don, you're so high on Liverpool's depth. What kind of percentage chances are you giving them to wrap up the quadruple?
The quadruple? I thought you were going to say the title because I was going to go 51-49. I was going to try and go a little bit as close as I possibly could. Quadruple, man, that's hard, Sebi. It's never been done before. No one's ever done it in English football. So it's got to be low. But the chalk in the Carabao Cup off, that's in the cabinet. They're now in a final. They'll look who they're going to play after tomorrow. Is it Chelsea? Is it going to be Palace? I think you can start saying it's something in the region of 30%. But that's still quite high.
The chart of the quadruple. You're going higher or lower than 30%?
I think it's a little bit lower just because I still have City as 51% favourites in terms of the league.
Okay.
But then when you add in, you expect Liverpool to...
You copied my man maths there, Shaq.
What's that?
You're copying my man maths there, 51-49.
I said that way. I said 51-49 weeks ago. But then when you add in, you've got two games against Villarreal to get through. See who you get in the final, if that were the case. You also, and as we're speaking now, you've got Chelsea and Crystal Palace. Mm-hmm. Given what we've seen from Chelsea over the last couple of games anyway, if Chelsea get through against Palace, again, that's... That's not a gimme for Liverpool. So you start ticking down from that 49, and Don's right. 30 is a little bit high to do all four, given what's ahead of them.
You mentioned Chelsea and Crystal Palace at the second semi-final going down Sunday at Wembley. Here's a look at the odds. No surprise, Chelsea heavy favorites over Crystal Palace. For a preview of this one, let's go back to Wembley with Frank and Alexis.
Yes, Abby, well, Wembley will be the place to be as well because Frank's old team, Chelsea, going up against Crystal Palace in the second semi-final of this FA Cup. Frank's been waiting for this match all day today to see which one of them will get the right to face Liverpool in the final come May. Frank, how do you see this one going?
Well, it's clear that Chelsea is a favourite, and but that's football. You always have to prove it, and you have to be consistent. You have to give your best to make sure that you're going to be effective. I don't forget that the coach of Crystal Palace is one of our former teammates.
Exactly.
And he gets some experiences, and he did to the Gunners in the run before, and he did very well. And Crystal Palace is playing well, and it's never easy to win against them. And you have to always give 100% if you want to achieve something. That's going to be Chelsea's duties, and they have to do so if they want to have a fantastic final against Liverpool.
And then just sticking the pin on Chelsea now, what do you think is going to be key for this one, or who do you think should be key for this one? Because Chelsea, there's a certain name, Romelu Lukaku, he should be back for this one. This is the kind of game he needs to step up in, right?
It's a fantastic opportunity for him to show to the world that he's back to his best, and he wants to at least go back to his best. And you play at Wembley, it's a semi-final, it's fantastic. It's where football was created. So you have to give your best. Hopefully, if he plays, we're going to have a big eye on him. But I think about also who's going to play in the middle of the park, either Kante, Jorginho or Kovacic, who's going to play alongside Lukaku, where there's going to be Havertz, Werner, Mount, Ziyech maybe. So it's going to be interesting to see how the coach is going to cope with the whole situation. Also, who's going to play at the back in goals. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting. And don't forget Crystal Palace, because Crystal Palace is a very good team, and they're going to give something special, because It's been a while since Crystal Palace has been in the semi-final at Wembley.
Exactly, and I was just about to say that you know Patrick Vieira and you know him very well, and he has done some magic at Crystal Palace, and everyone's been talking about it here. They deservedly are in the semi-finals of this FA Cup, and you never know, guys, because the FA Cup is all about magic. So we'll see if Crystal Palace gets some of that magic or if it will be Frank's old team Chelsea. Back to you, Sebi.
You never know. Always good to go out on a shot with a dancing... Frank Leboeuf, how do you think this one will go on Sunday?
Listen, I think Vieira has done wonderfully well with Crystal Palace, but I think this may prove to be a step too far. And to Alex's question to Frank about which player is key in this tie, Conor Gallagher, and he's not playing. Conor Gallagher, Chelsea player on loan at Crystal Palace, who has been so pivotal to Palace's success, but Chelsea blocked his participation. And I think that really takes away from Crystal Palace in a significant way. Now they're trying to plug holes. And it was always going to be a tough ask without Gallagher. I just don't see how Crystal Palace get the better of Chelsea.
Don, just like City and Liverpool, Chelsea had a busy midweek as well in the Champions League. What do you think the approach will be from Tuchel?
Well, they want to win the game. They want to win a trophy. They want to try and finish season on a high. No trophies left to play for. They're obviously not going to catch Man City and Liverpool in the Premier League, at the Champions League as well. So this is lost a final against Liverpool in the Carabao Cup. So this is their last trophy that they can win. And I think he'll motivate them to try and win it. I think answering... Alexis's question, I think Jorginho might be the main man. I think if it was Palace on another day, back in the day when me and Shaka used to play, it was Old Trafford or Villa Park where the semis were played, they might have had a chance on a wide open pitch, and Shaka stole my thunder, no Conor Gallagher, on a wide open pitch at Wembley against Chelsea. I think Chelsea will, you know, not win it by a massive scoreline, but I think they'll be comfortable in the game, and I think Jorginho might be the man.
Don, we know how much you love Conor Gallagher. Are you going to be able to watch without him involved?
Absolutely, but it's a shame, isn't it? It's a shame, and I think Thomas Tuchel apologised, didn't he? Apologised, saying, "I'm really sorry. I love him, but I can't let him play against the parent club." So, I mean, what a shame! It would have been nice if Chelsea had allowed it, but you can totally understand. Imagine if he scored the winner, if he was available. So, yeah, I totally get it.
All right, then we'll leave it there. Should be a great game Sunday at Wembley. Chelsea and Crystal Palace, the second of the semifinals ahead of the final in mid-May. Coverage starts at 11 a.m. Eastern time right here on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
As we mentioned off the top of the show, just a huge day in the race for the top four in the Premier League. Spurs dropping a late decision at home against Brighton. Trossard with a goal in the 90th minute. And that the difference as we welcome back Don and Shaka to discuss. Don, I'll start with you. What happened to Spurs today?
flat. Harry Kane's probably regretting the decision that he left London to go and watch the Masters and then probably come back a little bit jet-lagged because he was off it. But so were many. I mean, I didn't see this result coming at all. I commentated on Brighton last week when they got a win against Arsenal and they were magnificent. But I thought Tottenham at home, four wins on the spin. Antonio Conte deliver a team talk where it's five on the spin. He'll cement top four. It's a guaranteed Tottenham win. And they turned up, I think, with a little bit of arrogance, thinking it's just Brighton. We've got enough at the top end of the pitch to score goals and we'll win it two or three. And they got into that mode and they could never, ever recover.
Shaka, Spurs been on a good run of late, but this is a huge missed opportunity. If they win this game with the results going the way they did, they could have been 6 points clear in a race for top four.
It's a huge missed opportunity. But Don's right. They deserve nothing from this game and got it. This was as poor a Spurs performance as you could hope to see. And listen, he's right. Listen, whether it's travel to the Masters or not, Harry Kane didn't show up. Heung-min Son didn't offer anything either. And this is always the issue with Spurs. Without Kane, without Son, who do you call on? Spurs don't get goals from midfield. Kulusevski's got a couple. Lucas Moura's got a couple. Few of the defenders have a couple when they step up from set pieces. But once Brighton denied them that from set pieces, you look around and just wondered, well, who's the player who's going to step up? And even as I look at the starting 11 now, I'm drawing blanks. I do not know where the goals come from with any kind of regularity outside of Kane and Son and up against a very, very good Brighton side. Let's give them their credit. As poor as they've been in front of goal and as much as they struggle to score, especially of late, their football was deserving of all 3 points, and they got it in the end.
Don, I have to ask you about the effort, or maybe we should say lack thereof, from Eric Dier on the goal from Brighton late. Seemed to turn his back on the fake. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, exactly that. He thought the shot was going to be taken, so he went all in to try and put the block on, but he should have recognised or should have stayed on his feet. That Trossard's a tricky player who's always going to try a little trick and cut inside him. And you've got to try and read that. And if you allow him on his right foot, he bends one into the top corner, past Lloris, you say, well, that's all I could do. But he took the easy option, dived in, you know, cardinal sin, then it makes the finish a little bit easier. The only break Tottenham got from the game today, Sebi, is actually Kulusevski should have been sent off in the game. He had an elbow which was wild against Cucurella, I think it was, and should have been sent off, so he got lucky. But it was just a woeful Tottenham performance. It was really bad.
To that point, Mwepu could have been sent off as well. He had a couple of challenges that were already been booked and a couple that were right on the edge that Potter had to substitute him at halftime, and rightly so, because he was about to be gone himself. But to Don's point about Dier diving in, I understand you think a shot is coming in, you go to close the shot down, but why you turn to go half on, turn your body in the way that you do? I don't understand. I mean, you're a defender in your own box. I mean, that is as infuriating as anything to a footballer. Yeah. Why? I cannot understand or explain it. And it, as I said before, in the end, it resulted in a goal, but it was a deserved goal.
Speaking of infuriating, you know who's going to be mad is Antonio Conte. What do you think his reaction will be to this performance, Don?
Oh, he'll be fuming. He'll be fuming, and rightly so. And he'll be fuming probably because Harry Kane has asked Antonio Conte if he could fly to Augusta to watch the Masters. I don't know if that's a small thing and I'm making it into a big one, but it seems all of a sudden now that was a bad decision. He's picked a side that was, or should have won the game, but he didn't get them at it, and he should have recognised that at halftime. Then he should have delivered a more powerful team talk at halftime because the game was just drifting, and it was drifting into Brighton's favour. But he never got a spark out of them second half, so maybe he could have done a little bit more, being a little bit more passionate and emotional, as we know he is. But try and get them going, because, as I said, four wins on the spin could have been five, could have really put one or two teams away from that top four. Massive, massive missed opportunity.
Meanwhile, at Old Trafford, Manchester United 3-2 winners over Norwich City. Cristiano Ronaldo with a hat trick, including the game winner on a free kick in the 76th minute, the 50th club hat trick of his career. Don, what happened? I thought Erik ten Hag said he didn't want Ronaldo when he gets to Manchester United. You think he wants him now?
Honestly, Sebi, don't be conned by Man United winning this game. They were horrendous today. Ralph Raniak said the same thing after the game. He said, if they play the same way against Liverpool, we'll get nothing out of the game. We'll get hammered, paraphrasing on the hammered, but he said they'll get nothing out of the game. And at 2-2, Norwich were by far the best side. It took Ronaldo's hat-trick to get them out of trouble. They were passive. They were lazy. They played like school children. Man United only wanted to play when they had the ball. They weren't interested in running around when Norwich had the ball. Defensively, all over the place. Norwich carved them open so many times in this game. Lindelof and Maguire, horrendous as a pair. The only players can take credit, in my humble opinion, from this performance was De Gea in goal. He made a crucial save inside 5 minutes against Timo Pukki. Made a million of them this season. He's probably been their player of the season. I would then say Ronaldo, obviously, because he got a hat-trick. Anthony Elanga in the first half was really good. Flashes of genius from Paul Pogba. But the rest of them, honestly, if Erik ten Hag's watching videos of the Everton game last week, that was a low. And he'll watch the 3-2 and he'll probably get wind of the scoreline thinking, oh, they must have played well in that. He'll watch that and he'll think, my word, they were so open. Paul Pogba was in a midfield on his own. I mean, Ranić picked an attack inside, fair play to him, but it left Paul Pogba completely isolated. And every time Norwich got into that midfield area, 2v1, 3v1, they got it, Man United. And Man United looked like they could have shipped 4 or 5. Norwich's XG was higher than Man United at Old Trafford. Mm.
Put yourself in Ten Hag's shoes, Xhaka. Are you getting rid of Ronaldo?
Not if I don't have to right now. And here's a challenge for Ten Hag coming in. You need to get rid of a lot of players. When you look at this squad, when you look at Manchester United, where they are right now, you're not quite sure who you're keeping. Keep in mind that Ranić starts with Lingard, who barely sees minutes, has to bring him off to bring on Matic and Mata as the players to come on to try to change the game. That just speaks about the problems within the squad, how much needs to be done when Ten Hag comes in, and how do you find space? How do you find the money to really bring Manchester United back to where they need to be? And it's a task that I'm not sure that any manager is looking forward to. I think it takes Ten Hag six or seven transfer windows to even start closing the gap on the likes of City and Liverpool. So as of right now, I keep Ronaldo because he's the best of what's there, but I'm trying to shift a lot of players at the same time and knowing full well that won't be easy.
Yeah, but Ronaldo's not one of them, right? I mean, you see those goals.
For right now, Ronaldo's not a priority. Getting rid of Ronaldo is not a priority. It might work in terms of freeing up money and certainly funds for salaries, but in terms of performances, he is way down the list as to who's most important to move.
And Don, you were going through the 11 earlier, but he really is the only difference maker in this group, isn't he?
Absolutely. Anthony Elanga is a fantastic young player, but he's young. He can't do it on his own. He'll get better and he'll get wiser as he gets older. But the man that steps up when you really need him, as he has done all of his career, is Cristiano Ronaldo. It's what he does. He stood over that free kick. He owned Old Trafford. And I'm watching it thinking he'll score here because this is what Ronaldo does. Granted, definitely it was a goalkeeping error in my opinion. Tim Krul should have saved it. And then horrendous error for Ronaldo's first goal. So Norwich sort of played into Man United's hands. But I'm with Xhaka. I was looking at the game and chatting to my commentary member before the game. And we were saying about the surgery that needs to be done at Man United. Mm. There's players leaving on free transfers. Nemanja Matic has come out and said, well, he's leaving at the end of season. So have Man United got a £300 million war chest? Because that's what it's going to take. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sebi, but I think Man United finished the season last season. I think it was something like 12 points behind Man City. Well, before they kicked the ball today, they were 23 points off Man City. So the surgery that needs to happen before they get anywhere close to Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City, in terms of money, then trying to find a team spirit for these guys to gel, it's almost like if Ten Hag's really looking at it, he might think, this is not for me. It's too much surgery. Xhaka said there, 6 to 7 windows. That's an awful long time.
Here's the amazing thing with this for me, which will lead into Southampton Arsenal, is that Manchester United beaten bottom club Norwich at Old Trafford. is about right, given what we've seen of Manchester United. The only amazing thing is that Manchester United are still 3 points off top four, which that is the amazing thing on the back of that performance and that result.
Yeah, so Manchester United gets their big 3 points en route to hopefully fourth place. Arsenal kind of does the opposite. They go away to St. Mary's against Southampton and fall by a final score of 1-0. Really a disappointing and kind of surprising. I mean, not surprising now. They had been on a roll, now lost three in a row, Shaka.
They'd been on a roll. And this was the graphic that came up moments ago. And it speaks to who Arsenal have been. 76% possession against Southampton. But you saw Arsenal on that great run, and in the middle of that run, you saw wins against Wolves where they celebrated, wins against Aston Villa, that again they were criticised, and I thought that this was Arsenal showing backbone. Then they go to Selhurst Park, old-fashioned ground, small fans on top of you, and I think the young players didn't show up the way that we'd expected them to or had done in previous weeks. Then they at home to Brighton, have that Martinelli goal disallowed just before halftime, and things aren't going their way and are never really able to get it together again. Bukayo Saka has a very good opportunity in this one at 0-0, where Fraser Forster makes an incredible save.
He made a few.
I have to give Forster credit. But again, when things don't go Arsenal's way, as talented a bunch as they are, you just wonder if that youth and that inexperience has come back to haunt them yet again for the third game in a row.
Don, which is more true? Arsenal today were unlucky or undeserving?
I think a little bit unlucky when you see the XG and you see the amount of shots they had over or close to 25. They performed better. And Shaka's right, Fraser Forster was man of the match. So when the opposition player is your goalkeeper who gets man of the match, you know Arsenal have created enough chances to try and draw or win the game. But this is an Arsenal team that have all of a sudden fell off a cliff. When the top four was on and it looked as though they were going to cement top four in a crucial stage of the season, they've just gone three losses on the spin against teams where they shouldn't lose. You know, they shouldn't lose against Crystal Palace, but that can happen. It's Selhurst Park. They've got a great atmosphere there. That can happen. Then you go to Brighton, play Brighton, they lose. Then all of a sudden you lose to Southampton, who are a riddle. You never know what they're going to produce. They got beat 6-0 off Chelsea last week, turned up today and won. So form-wise, Arsenal have just fell off a cliff. And a lot of the radio stations over here are championing, you know, Patrick Vieira for the Arsenal job. You know, for him to move Crystal Palace only four or five positions away from Arsenal has done a fantastic job. No Lacazette, he's down with COVID. So all of a sudden, this squad's looking a little bit thin.
Yeah, to that point, I mean, are we really criticizing Arteta here, or are we just acknowledging, Don, that Arsenal doesn't have the depth that the other clubs do? It's not just Lacazette, it's Tierney, it's Partey. I mean, these are huge pieces for Arsenal that they don't have during this run where, coincidentally, they've lost three in a row.
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest. I think Mikel Arteta had done the right thing with Aubameyang. He was, or seemed to be, hurt in that dressing room. He made the squad at that time, I think, more of a unit. There was more of a team spirit about them. You know, there's one or two big misses. Tierney's the big miss. As we saw last week, Granit Xhaka had to go out of central midfield and he went to play at left back. Well, Tavares played today and he's completely shot and devoid of any confidence. Then Southampton score this goal from Bednarek and it puts Arsenal under huge pressure because you're playing in a game where you've just lost two on the spin and you're playing a game where you can't lose three on the spin. And then that goal gives you a little punch in the face. But in all fairness, I think they reacted a little bit better today. Should have got something out of the game in terms of their possession, XG and how many shots they had. But that'll be a blow to Mikel Arteta tonight.
I think the only mistake the only fault we could put at Arteta's feet is not replacing Aubameyang. I'm with Don. I think get rid of him. I thought that was a good decision to get rid of him when he did. But you don't replace him in the January transfer window. I never thought Nketiah was good enough to fill that void, even as a stand-in for Lacazette. I thought that was the mistake that Arteta made that maybe is coming back to haunting.
Let's do something we've never done here on this show before. Let's take a look at the odds for the top four. Let's also play into Don's strengths here with some math, right, as we take a look at the odds. Spurs, Manchester United, Arsenal. There you see their odds to grab fourth place in that last spot in the Champions League. This is, I think, best described, Don, as a fluid situation. Where are we after today, I guess?
Sebi, I just think it's a theme where every single week we go, definitely Tottenham. Oh, no, it's definitely Arsenal. Man United have got a chance, by the way. It's just bizarre how Tottenham go four wins on the spin and you go, yeah, it's definitely them. Before that, it was Arsenal. Or they've just lost three on the spin. Man United before today, one win in five. And they're the big winners today with a 3-2 win. So I just think it's massively up in the air. I don't think anyone's got a clue. I don't think we can sit here with any certainty and go, yes, it's definitely one of those three.
Give me your order right now, after today.
Spurs, Arsenal, Manchester United.
Okay.
Arsenal have by far the toughest of the run-ins in the three. And you have to see how they now cope with what's to come, given the results that they just had to endure. How can Arteta and Arsenal get things back together? We've spoken about Manchester United, and I keep seeing the amazing thing is that they're still in the conversation because footballing wise they have absolutely no right to be. If I'm Antonio Conte, I'm saying, listen, today was a really bad day, but really not as damaging as it could have been. We have to put that right. And I think at this point, it's Spurs to lose.
For now, Shaq agrees with the odds makers. You've got his Spurs. Don, you with them as well?
I think so, because trying to fast forward to the fixtures this week, I think Tottenham have got Brentford, so they have to bounce back. You'd expect them to win. Man United, their next two games is Liverpool and Arsenal. So the way they play today, they're getting zero out of them games because they're in horrendous form in terms of how they're playing, although they scratched a win today. So I think my three in order would be Spurs, Man United, and Arsenal because of their away fixtures.
All right, there you have it. Great stuff from the boys. Plenty more from that dynamic duo in today's edition of Extra Time, which will surely be difficult to beat any edition of Extra Time when we're taking photos of Dan Thomas and posting them.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That'll do it for this edition of ESPNFC. Always great to be with you, Shaka. Aww. Thanks to Don as well and our great crew out at Wembley. You and I, though, are not done yet.
Oh, no.
Extra Time begins right now. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPNFC's Extra Time. Shaka, I do not bobble my head like that to the intro.
Every time you say, hey there, everybody, all I can think of is a little bobbly head.
Shaka Hislop, Don Hutchison with me as we get ready to go through your questions here from Twitter. I'm clearly just making time as I sift through my pile of papers to find the appropriates. All right, for Don, are you getting enough sleep? Congratulations, by the way, says our good friend Raj. What are we congratulating for you?
Had a baby boy, Sebi.
There it is.
Last Monday, so thanks. Was that Raj? Yeah, thanks, Raj. Yeah, he's been really good, Sebi.
How's the sleep?
Really good. Lots of sleep, not too bad. 3 hours. Here we go, little Miller. Three hours at night, then an hour feed, then about 2-3 hours sleep again, then an hour feed, 3 hours. So it's not too bad.
Yeah, I thought you might have had a ready-made excuse for the bags under your eyes, but he didn't take it there.
Yeah, well.
Oh, you're saying I've got bags under my eyes, are you?
I did just say that, yeah. Well. Congratulations, beautiful. I texted Don to congratulate him. I asked him, what are the percentages that Miller turns out to be a pro footballer? 98% yes, 3% no. So, we know Miller will not be a mathematician. We know that. All right. For Don and Shaka, who's been your hammer of the year, and do you have West Ham as your favorites to win the Europa League? Shaka, you first.
Hammer of the year. I'm going to go I think it's hard to look further than Michael Antonio for the year. I think if we're talking the calendar year, it's probably Bowen.
Okay.
But over the course of the entire season, I'm leading Michael Antonio.
We were talking about it the other day. I think in extra time as well, Bowen might play his way into the England squad. Mm. Don, who's been your hammer of the year? And do you have West Ham as favourites to win the Europa League?
Yes, favourites. I mean, Eintracht will be difficult. I'm going to go a little bit left field on this one, Sebi. I'm going to go, because we could have went Declan Rice, Michael Antonio, Jared Bowen. I'm going to go Craig Dawson.
Mm.
Just reliable, dependable, solid, no frills, no injuries, gets on with his job, heads it, boots it, brilliant attitude, character.
Kind of like Don as a player. No frills, just heads it and boots it.
That sounded like a backhanded compliment.
That's a bit harsh, I think.
Just run around a little bit.
Speaking of what we were like as players, what do the players or coaches say to the keeper when they have a shockastrophic moment like Stefan? As a teammate or coach, do you feel obligated to talk to the keeper at halftime or after the match? Don, I do want to hear from you on this, but I want to hear from the goal. Do you want people talking to you? Do you want to be left entirely alone?
I want to be left alone. I know I've made a mistake. I don't need to be reminded of that. But then, you know, similarly, if I'm playing behind, if a defender makes a glaring error and it ends up in the back of the net, I don't go shouting at him either. There are goalkeepers who do. But I think he knows. He already knows he's made a mistake. It's already ended up in the back of the net. That defender doesn't need reminding. So when the table is turned and I'm the one at fault, I don't need anybody to tell me the same.
You probably don't need reminding, but do you want somebody to pick you up? Because I think that, right,
you don't
need anybody to criticize you, but because there's an image today after Stefan makes a mistake, one of his teammates kind of coming to pick him up.
I think that helps.
Okay.
Otherwise, you just feel left all out and all alone, you know, and I think at least somebody being there helps. It helps.
Don, it was never Shaka that would have ever made this mistake.
No.
But if any of the other teammates did, or anybody else that you played with did, what would you have said to them?
See, I played with Shaka, and I would have been Shaka's worst nightmare, because I would have seen Shaka in the showers, and I would have got a bar of soap, I would have chucked it to Shaka's feet just so quickly he makes another mistake and go, see, you're doing it all the time, Shaka. You keep making mistakes, throw it in his hands, and he drops the bar just to try and make a little bit of a joke of it, make a little bit light work of it. But you've got to know your players, Sebi.
Yeah.
Because if Shaka's head's gone, and I see the whites in his eyes, and I make a mistake, he might want to rip my head off.
Yes.
Yes.
So you've got to be careful.
That's true, too.
Jokes are great in a moment of tension if they land. If they don't,
don't
be that
sometimes
guy.
Sometimes best leave it till the Monday or whatever it is.
Somebody who has had many jokes not land over his life. I know that feeling well.
Okay,
Don, do you remember?
I feel like there's some deeper hurt in this.
Let's not dig into it on extra time, shall we? Don, do you remember how many red cards you've gotten in your career? What was the most bizarre one of the lot?
I think I'm at about 6 or 7, so quite high. The most bizarre one, I mean, I had some when my head was gone and the red mist was there and I two-footed someone.
But those aren't bizarre.
Got sent off.
That's a normal red card, right?
Yeah. So I think the most bizarre one where I played, I think it was at Villa Park, and we're getting beat at Villa Park, and I've committed a foul, yellow card. And then it was that type of game where the referee was just giving everything against me. Where was I? Everton, I think, at the time. We're having a mare, just can't get anything going, just flat, passes not coming off. And then the referee give a soft foul for one of my teammates, and the ball sort of squirmed from about 20 yards away, and it landed at my foot, and my head's gone, and I've just picked up the ball, threw it in the air, and I've volleyed it out of Villa Park, literally volleyed it over the main stand. Because I was just gone, and the referee's gone, well, that's a second yellow. Bang, off you go.
Similar story. So I was in college, and we were playing in a game, and it was a good friend of mine, was already on a yellow. Same thing, foul called, very upset, picks the ball up, punts it 60 yards into the air.
Right.
as soon as it's in the air, like before it comes down, we know he's gone, right?
Right,
obviously,
right.
The ref is coming over. He looks at the ref deadpan and goes, "Don't you do it. Don't you do it." To this day, I still text my buddy Alex Castillo. I said, "Don't you do it. Don't you do it."
Did he?
Send him off. We were leading in the game, go down 10 men, end up losing the match.
Oh,
not as bizarre as my favorite red card story, which is when I threw the ball at a ref. But that's for another time. Shaka, what's your most bizarre?
You have some deep hood. You have some issues, Sebi.
You got a few reds, right?
But
Two. Just collisions, what?
Oh, no. One was for handball outside the box, away to Middlesbrough. And the other was for West Ham against Chelsea. Ball got played through. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank coming through, who made an absolute meal of the challenge. That was Jimmy Floyd, though. Don could tell you. Went over me and was... The ref was sending everybody off. He sent three players off that day. What's going on with your phone?
I don't know. It just started playing ambient noises there.
Shuck, that's a fine.
That is a fine.
It's on silent. It actually just started.
His phone starts playing little wheel noises.
Did that distract you from your high-level analysis there?
Sebi, three questions into this extra time, and you need help.
Four questions. Thanks for paying attention. Here's the fifth. If Argentina win the World Cup in Qatar, will Shaka finally consider Messi as the GOAT?
Well, let's get you across that bridge when we get there. I have Argentina as my favorites. Argentina is my pick to win.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Just because of Messi?
Because I think they're the best team to win the tournament.
31, is that it, unbeaten? It's a pretty good bet. For Don, we all talk constantly how City need a number 9. But in your opinion, what do Liverpool need most?
Wow. Not much. But one of my favorite players in the Premier League, and I'm not trying to get rid of him for West Ham, is Declan Rice. So Jude Bellingham's ripping it up at Borussia Dortmund. If Liverpool got a Declan Rice or a Jude Bellingham for maybe a year or two's time when Jordan Henderson maybe just gets into his sort of early 30s, but you're nitpicking because top end of the pitch, defensively, Konate's young. One of those two. Bellingham or Declan Rice.
It's interesting because we compare the two all the time, but when you talk about City, there's the obvious need, and Liverpool doesn't have that obvious need, do they?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that they have an obvious need. As Don's saying, maybe in a year or two, somebody to replace Jordan Henderson. But I don't think there's an awful lot.
We've seen that in the past. Maybe not huge transfer windows from Liverpool,
but they just keep ticking over.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the beauty with Liverpool. They just even the sign Diaz has kind of come out of nowhere, but then all of a sudden he hits the park running, and you just think no. And as Don was saying during the show, that their squad is as good as any in world football right now. Liverpool's and without anything major, anything that just kind of came out of left field. You know, probably the last really big signing was Thiago, and you felt that they maybe needed that ball playing in midfield. But the others that they signed since have just been kind of, when they happened, you're just kind of, no problem. And they've been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Konate, another one that...
Jota, fantastic.
Leaning on of late. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Extra Time. That's it.
Short and sweet.
Okay.
Short and sweet. Sebi's
off
Dan
to
Thomas.
Listen to his ambient music, his whale sounds.
Let's see what else my phone decides to do.
Calm down a little bit because, boy.
Because what was that?
It's been a day. It's been a day for Sebastian.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.